Always good to see you unravel yourself from the chair and walk in and then sit down again and become a normal size. Tamara, O'Don, good to see you.
Good to see you too.
Stephen, honeymoon rates. See, I have a thing about honeymoon rates. Have you bought a place tomorrow? Do you know about these honeymoon rates?
No.
When people call you in, the bank calls you and they say, oh, here's a lovely honeymoon rate.
Don't sign for one now.
No.
Because rates are coming down. You know, a lot of people are talking 4%, 4.5%.
Really?
So you wouldn't want to.
Stephen?
Well, in the next year or two, I think.
I'd
say by Christmas they have to go. You have to remember, we're still way out of whack with the rest of the world. I mean, the Americans are 2%, the Japanese are 0.5%, the Brits are 5%, the Europeans are 4.5%, and we have just come down by 1% to 6%, and only the Kiwis are higher at 7.5%. So last thing I would be doing is locking in a honeymoon rate. Interest rates are coming down. This is the first of several moves.
What do you think of that, Kevin?
There's no question. And I think the fact that they're coming down is not necessarily all good news. It's because there's some real troubles in the economy and that we've got to stimulate. We're in a deflationary sort of situation. And so, you know, Stephen's absolutely right. You know, within a year or 18 months or so, we could see some very, very good opportunities for people to buy in. Very, very well. You've just got to hold on a little bit longer.
What if you fixed your rate?
Well, then eventually it comes unfixed. You've only fixed it for 2 years or 3 years or whatever. And then, you know, the thing is that when you go to reset, you could be in a lot better position. So, you know, the thing was you protected yourself from something that may have happened where they might have gone up. They haven't. You've got to live with it. You know, the honeymoon rates, the honeymoon from hell, you know.
That's Explain how it works. They're really, really creepy things, Tamara, these honeymoon rates. They look like they're a gift, but actually, please explain,
Look,
Kevin.
The thing is the people who sell you the honeymoon rate have got no accountability. Often they're a mortgage broker or often they're somebody who gets paid a commission for selling the rate at a very, very low rate. And in America, they were selling honeymoon rates for 1% or so.
Wow.
And then after 2 years, they cracked back up to the normal rate and suddenly people thought they could afford it while it was on the honeymoon deal. And they thought, doesn't matter. If I can't afford it when it cracks up to the big rate, the property would have gone up. I can refinance or I can actually sell the property at a profit. The problem was the assumption that property prices always rise, and they didn't.
Mm.
And so that's been the problem. It's all started to unravel. Mm.
Tamara, I know you have to go and get ready to deliver the news, and so I guess possibly the first part of the program is all money, money, money.
You're absolutely correct. Mm. So I won't rehash anything that you've been talking about, but we're also going to look to at the ordeal that the Lapthorne family is going through in Croatia at the moment. Mm. Her poor family has been through the ringer in the past 24 hours or so. Not sure if you've heard this afternoon, but a fisherman found some remains off the coast of Dubrovnik. Called investigators straight away, and many people thought, okay, well, this might be a bit of a breakthrough in the case. But nobody actually told the family that this was what was going on, and Britt Lapthorne's father, Dale, heard from a journalist that this discovery had been made, so was bracing himself for some sort of closure. The local police commissioner then held a press conference to say, look, it's probably not her. Mm. We're pretty confident that it's not. So he's just been on this enormous roller coaster ride for the past 24 hours, even worse than what he's been going through for the past couple of weeks. So I just feel so sorry for that family.
It's a dreadful, tragic situation. And, of course, he says that he's not getting any pleasure from the Australian Federal Policeman
that's over there. That's right. He just doesn't feel like he's getting any love whatsoever from investigators and just really feels out of the loop of communication at the moment.
What an awful situation for a family to be
in. It is. Now, I'm just going to throw a few words at you, and I want you to tell me what these things have in common, if you can.
Mm.
A mountain pygmy possum, a northern hairy-nosed wombat, orange-bellied parrot. Does that give it away?
They're all extinct or approaching extinction.
They're all very well done. They're all critically endangered.
Up in Mount Hotham, the pygmy possum.
Yes.
Yes.
And Australia is at the top of a really quite depressing list that's been published by the International Union for the Conservation of Nature. And it's reported that nearly 800 Australian species are at risk of disappearing altogether. And there's a new animal on that list. That's the Tassie devil, the facial tumour that's been decimating the population. So got to lift our game. It's terrible.
We need to look after our special things.
We do.
Thank you, Tamara.
Thank you.
See you on the news tonight.
You will.
Stephen Mayne, it is 17 minutes to 6. I'm interested in your take on the RBA cut because on the one hand the spin is, it's proactive, we're on top of this. Do you have the same spin on it?
Well, I think firstly you have to say with Glenn Stevens, the governor, they should call him "Look at me, Glenn."
You think he's an attention seeker?
Well, I mean, this is the guy who cranked up interest rates in the middle of an election campaign, first time ever, which was an incredibly bold thing for a new governor to do. And then today he's just come out with shock and awe on the market and actually arguably turned around world sentiment, because Asian markets turned around on the back of this. If you watch the global business news channels, they're all talking the Reserve Bank of Australia. This means global coordinated action by central banks. So this is the biggest move in monetary policy for world impact we've ever seen. I mean, this is Australia on the world stage. Our stock market's turned around 200 points from the bottom to where it got to. India's now cut by 50 basis points. The Brits are expected to go on Thursday. European markets are up in early trade, and they're all talking about Australia. And
what's wrong with that?
I think it's good. So I think the rates were too high, and it should have happened. But I think that the way they wanted to sort of shock the market was that they allowed expectations to be 50 basis points, 50 basis points. And to come out with something, I mean, this is the biggest shock in monetary policy we've ever seen. At one level, this means, by jingo, it must be bad. And it is bad. September was the worst month in the history of globalized financial markets. I mean, we've never seen a crisis like it since the world has become so interrelated. Who knows? It might then lead to the others cutting rates. It might lead to the desperate sort of turnaround we need. People might look back and say this was the turning point when we had the coordinated cuts in rates. And at the end of the day, if people ask where can this end, ultimately what can governments and central banks do?
Well, it is actually an interesting management policy, because on the one hand, when things are dire, you can be cautious, or on the other hand, you can just be bold. And they have chosen the bold option.
Well, they had to be bold, didn't they, Steve? There was no way they could do it, you know, step by step. It's interesting that Bernanke, the Federal Reserve Chairman, you know, he did his thesis on the causes of the Great Depression, and he knows that the only way that you can stop that sort of sentiment is some bold action. But unfortunately, he hasn't taken it, and the American Congress was dithering, and they finally got that $700 billion through, and the rescue of the rescue, and everyone said, oh, so what? And now, if we see coordinated action, that could be just the thing that would really kill the shorts that are trying to short the market, and suddenly people now say, hey, something's going to happen, and you know, we need to actually have some decisive action, and it's been very interesting. It's happened here in Australia.
Kevin Bailey, Stephen Mayne, take a listen to what Wayne Swan had to say about this, how he reacted. I think you'll hear in his voice he was caught a little on the hop.
Well, it was certainly a very significant decision from the Reserve Bank. We've not had one of that size for some time, but I think as the Reserve Bank observed in their statement, what has occurred in terms of international financial markets in recent times is very significant. And as a consequence, they've given, I guess, a larger than expected cut.
Even larger than expected for you?
Well, certainly significant. I think it's a significant decision, but the really important thing about it is that it will provide substantial relief for families with a mortgage, substantial relief to business, but I think also it will strengthen our economy and help us to ride out the global financial crisis.
Now, earlier in the week, you were being cautious about urging banks to pass on interest rate cuts. How has this changed your perspective?
Well, it hasn't changed my perspective at all, because you see, what I was observing was that the cost of raising money, particularly in short-term markets, was just through the roof. And in those circumstances, the regulators were advising me that it would be difficult, if not impossible, for the banks to pass on the full amount of a Reserve Bank cash rate cut. And indeed, that is the case. But I've also made it very clear to the major banks that when circumstances normalise in financial markets, the government expects to see the rest of that cut passed on by the banks to their customers.
Treasurer Wayne Swan talking on this program earlier this afternoon. Stephen Mayne, what else do you see in your crystal ball?
Well, I think Kevin's comment about the Americans and their reactions, I actually think it's the Europeans that have triggered this latest round of panic, where it was an amazing situation of Euro politics over the weekend, where the Spaniards were shunned and weren't invited to Paris, and the Brits, the Germans, the French, the Italians had a chat. The Germans said, no, we're not going to have an integrated, organised bailout system. Then Angela Merkel flew back to Berlin and wrote out a cheque for 50 billion euro to bail out their second biggest bank. And previously it was meant to be 15 billion. And the whole world said, gee, it's a Mad Hatter's Tea Party in Europe. And if the bailout is suddenly 35 billion euros worse, then it must be bad. And then Europe had its biggest sell-off ever. And that's what led to today. We woke up today to the worst point of the crisis, where you know, the Russian market was down 20%, the French down 9%, and then the Americans were down more than 800 points at the worst. And it was the old lesson about, you know, Mondays in October. I mean, the 87 crash was a Monday in October. Last Monday was the 1st of October, biggest point fall ever. Monday, yesterday, 800 points at the worst for the Americans. So I'm waiting till we get through Monday, October 29. If we get through that, then we're through the worst.
The headlines around the world, absolutely, were rather dire. The Wall Street Journal said markets fall on rescue doubts. Dow closes below 10,000. Tabloid Sun in the UK, £93 billion wiped off the UK stock market. The Straits Times in Singapore, The Big Plunge, Le Monde, Nouvelle Journée Noire sur la Place Bouzière, A New Black Day on the stock market. Of course, in Bhutan, it had the headline of the rising stock of the chicken, but we know that they deal more in happiness than money.
And Iceland, gross domestic happiness.
Yes, exactly.
And Iceland's going broke. The Prime Minister got up and said, we're facing national bankruptcy.
Whoa.
So we've saved the world, you know, with our rate cut today. Maybe we should give the Icelanders a $1 billion.
They're nice people.
They are nice people.
They've
had a great party for the last few years, and suddenly they've got all these debts and they're going broke. So,
and that's true for a lot of us, I think, Stephen, that we've had a great party for a number of years and suddenly we're going broke. We've been borrowing our way to prosperity and it was a false prosperity.
Tony from Sandringham's on line two. Hello, Tony.
Yeah, hi, Libby. It seems to me that the Australian dollar has been particularly savaged over the last 2 weeks. Even against the New Zealand dollar, which is worse off than we are. And I understand that part of the reason is this sort of arbitrage transaction where people borrow in Japanese yen at 1% interest rate and then switch it into Australian dollars to take advantage of Australian Treasury bonds or government Treasury bonds at about 6 or 7%. And then when the Australian dollar looks shaky, they're out. And that's what's caused a massive fall in the Australian dollar. And so I just feel like something like that should be outlawed. If they're going to outlaw short selling of shares, then something like this, which has major consequences for the Australian dollar, should be outlawed as well. And I wondered what Stephen and Kevin thought of that.
Look, I'll jump in there, and I think what we've got here is you can only hold back the tide so far. These shorts and these hedge funds and these currency arbiters and traders are a different world again to long-term investors. I think what we're seeing is a tale of two cities. You've got traders and speculators that can really influence things in the short term, but over the long term, the weight of money flows through and you end up with a situation where it gets back to equilibrium. Certainly a 25 or 30% downturn in the Australian dollar is unsustainable. A flight to quality in US Treasuries has also done a lot of this damage. A commodity-based economy like Australia, as we've seen the world head towards recession, there's something that can be said in relation to the price of commodities falling along the same sorts of lines. So those sorts of things are more longer term. The things that you talk about are really those short-term arbitrage and trading things. But ultimately, one would have to say that I think it's been a bit overdone.
I think the carry trade, as you describe it, is far less immoral than sort of naked short selling of financial stocks and starting false rumours. I think they're in a different category. But it is scary that we suffered a six cent fall in our dollar overnight, the biggest ever fall in 24 hours to less than 70 cents. And that is a zero-sum game. So all stock markets are going down, but the rest of the world just said we were the worst currency in the world.
Oh.
Basically, they're saying, well, the American financial system's falling over, but we're going to reward their dollar and punish your dollar. And that says, I think there's a few serious lessons for Australia in that message. The biggest one is we're borrowing $60 billion a year from the rest of the world. We have one of the world's worst current account deficits. It was the current account deficit that triggered Paul Keating's famous Banana Republic comments in 1986. And we can't keep borrowing $60 billion a year when we already have a $620 billion foreign debt. So we have to live within our means in a credit-constrained world. And if our income is going to fall off a cliff because the resources boom's over, the commodity prices have burst, then we have to seriously tighten our belts. And the world is looking at us and saying that. And so, yes, Kevin Rudd can say strong banks and budget surplus, but the fact of the matter is that, you know, the state of New South Wales is borrowing $18 million a day net. Our states are going to borrow $20 billion this year.
The councils in New South Wales have invested their money in hedge funds.
They've lost hundreds of millions in the collapse of Lehman, and we have to live within our means. And that's what the world is saying to us in a way with this currency crash that we've just suffered in the last 24 hours.
I couldn't agree more. Spot on.
Are you saying to me then that basically it is the economy stupid?
Well, rather than the speculators, I think that, John Howard spent years saying we've paid off federal government debt, aren't we clever? When in actual fact, the truth of the situation was we were running a massive current account deficit. We were hocking our households, $1 trillion of household debt, all on the back of a housing bubble, totally unsustainable. And even things like our foreign reserves. We've only got 30 billion of foreign reserves, which is the 37th biggest pile in the world. And other countries like Korea have got 250 billion. So we haven't huge savings.
There's not a lot of margin for error. I think that's the point.
I need to bring you a report that 40 people may have been injured in a mid-air emergency near Exmouth in Western Australia. It has been reported that the plane has landed safely. We're joined now by Veronica Flay from Exmouth. She's the Shire President. Sorry to interrupt you, gentlemen, but this is important news. Hello, Veronica.
Hello.
Can you tell me what has actually happened?
Look, unfortunately, I don't have a lot of detail, but my understanding at this point in time is that the aircraft hit a bit of turbulence, which caused some minor injuries to a number of people on board. I don't think there are as many as 40, but I, you know, there are a significant number nonetheless.
And tell me, what sort of jet was it? Who owns it?
Look, I'm not absolutely sure. My understanding was that it was an international flight, so I guess we'll have to wait and see for confirmation of that. Thank you.
Yeah. So it's an international flight. We don't know whether which airline?
No. My understanding is it was coming from Singapore.
So it was incoming?
Mm.
And headed
to my knowledge. But as I say, I may not have that absolutely right.
All right. So we don't know where the jet was destined?
No.
All right. So how many passengers were on board?
I think there are about 180 on board.
About 180. Mm. Okay. So as news comes to hand, we will keep you informed of the jet that has landed safely after a mid-air emergency near Exmouth in Western Australia. We don't know whose airline it was. We don't know where it was destined. We think it may have been coming from Singapore at 6:05. It's been action-packed here on 774 ABC Melbourne. Derek Gill has joined us.
Absolutely.
Good afternoon, Derek.
Libby, everyone.
What a day, hey?
Yeah, yes.
I have a text 100%. Message here that says, does this economic crisis mean that those of us who bought houses at the peak of the housing boom last year will soon be sitting on negative equity because house prices will fall, as in the US? Stephen Mayne.
A prospect, but I think the Reserve Bank will aggressively keep cutting interest rates at the first sign of that happening. So I think there was a housing bubble. It does need to correct, but they will try to avoid it with substantial reductions in interest rates. And today's cut will save Australians collectively $8 billion a year on their mortgages if 80% of it is passed through. So there is more relief coming, but there is a risk on the downside with house prices.
And at 6:04, you would say your advice would be, Kevin?
Well, to pay off as much of the debt as possible so you don't have negative equity in your home. And the thing is that the Reserve Bank is going to try to bring that back into equilibrium slowly, so that rents go up by, you know, 3 or 4% per annum, wages go up by 3 or 4% per annum. We may find that the nominal prices don't go up for long, but the real price goes down because of inflation. And that's the best way to get out of this situation.
Thank you, Stephen Mayne, for coming in. Kevin Bailey, thank you.